Good morning. It's 11:15, and we're here with Fred Malone, and I always say he's from the Historical Society, but that's my connection with him. He's done just about everything. We've been talking about that during the break, and I hope. Well, I got to make sure I'm doing something here. There we go. I've got it. I'm not a good engineer while I'm still talking, so I got to be careful, Fred. I'll mess something up.
My wife says I can't do two things at once.
That's my problem. Yeah. Hey, I did want to tell our listeners, if you're interested in calling in and saying something to Fred or myself, call WWGH, which is 740-383-9944. And if you have a hard time remembering those last four digits, they're just WWGH. All right. And we'd love to answer any of your questions. We're going to go on with this memoir as Fred is kind of giving me education that I need to have so that we can go on. We're going to do this every month if he doesn't mind. It's going to be up to us, right?
More than happy to. Yep.
So what do you got in store for us?
I've talked enough about myself. I wanted to just with all the hubbub, I guess is what I'll use, with what's been going on now about the possible disinterment of President Harding.
We've been talking about it a lot here.
And then Britain's book, The President's Daughter. I got to tell an interesting story about the book, The President's Daughter. I had a copy of the President's Daughter that I acquired some years ago. And I'm very proud of the fact that I have a copy because, as you know, the printing was limited. There was a court case that involved the stopping of the printing. So I think there were only 1,000 copies of the book that actually got printed. Huh. So they're kind of what you'd call scarce as hen's teeth, so to speak. And I already had a book that I acquired some years ago. But about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, my wife and I and a couple of friends of ours went to the Shawnee State Lodge, State Forest, down in Portsmouth.
Yeah, I know where it is.
And a beautiful lodge. They have an absolutely beautiful lodge there. And we stayed overnight there. And we went antiquing the next day in Portsmouth. And in the Bonnyfiddle district of Portsmouth, which is the old historical part of Portsmouth, there are a number of antique shops there, which is right up my alley.
Bonnyfiddle?
It's called Bonnyfiddle, yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. And don't ask me where they got the name. I used to know the story, but I've long since forgotten.
It sounds like a very happy violin.
It does, yeah. And maybe has something to do with that. I don't know. But it's a really great area to visit if you've not spent much time in the southern part of the state of Ohio. And, of course, it's right along the Ohio River. And they have the beautiful murals there.
Yes.
The river wall, the flood walls.
Right.
But anyway, I digress, which I do often.
Well, I just throw this in. All three of my children were athletes, and we were in Athens. So I've spent a lot of time in southern Ohio.
There you go. But anyway, in the Bonnyfiddle district, there are a number of antique shops, which is right up my alley. And I like to do that type of thing. And so we were touring the antique shops on this particular day. Went into this one little place. It was kind of like an antique / junk store.
Mm-hmm. The best place in the world.
Best place to go. And I mean, it was jam-packed full of stuff. You had to be careful when you walked through the aisles. You didn't knock something over.
I love those places.
And there was a back room that had a number of books in it. And I'm a sucker for books. Just ask my wife. I've got way too many. I have sacks everywhere, but I'm a voracious reader and I love to read. So I'm always looking through books, looking for something I don't have or something interesting or something that looks good. And I literally was crawling on the floor. In fact, my friend that was with me said, "What in the heck are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm just looking through these books." And it didn't look like anybody had touched any of this stuff in years. Dust covered, clear on the floor, stuck in bookshelves and in piles and boxes. And as I'm going through this one stack of books, I spy The President's Daughter. And I couldn't believe it. And
You knew what it was when you saw it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I pulled the other books apart. I pulled it out. And I opened it up. And it was basically in pristine condition. Didn't look like maybe it had ever been read. It was a little faded. Uh-huh. But
hadn't been broken.
no, not at all. And I said to my friend, I said, "Look what I found." And he knew about it because I'd told him the story about The President's Daughter before him, about the book and that type of thing. I said, "Look what I found. don't say anything. You know, don't say anything. And so I take the book out front, and you know, here's this guy sitting behind the counter, you know, and I said, oh, I found this book back here, and I had a couple other things. I said, what do you want for this book? He said,
50 cents.
I don't know. He says, give me a buck. So I bought the president's copy, my second copy of The President's Daughter, for $1.
Yeah, wow.
In a junk shop in Portsmouth, Ohio.
I'm going to have to start looking and see if I can find one.
So that's my story of The President's Daughter. So I have two copies now, but if you've never had an opportunity to read it, it is a very interesting read.
Do they have it at the local library?
I think they may have one back in their, what they call the Ohio Room, or right, whatever that place is now. I don't think they'll let you take it out, but I would assume. I think Scott's read it. I think maybe he went there and read it. But it is an interesting book to read. And of course, in light with what's going on now with Jim Blessing and his court filing that was filed back in May to exhume the body,
becomes very relevant, doesn't it?
It does become very relevant, and it's interesting because, especially in light of what's going on now with Trump trying to keep books from being published and released.
Yep.
This is the same thing that took place in 27, something like that, 27, when the government, the Republican National Committee, fought to keep The President's Daughter from being printed, and basically were successful because only 1,000 copies, I believe 1,000 copies is what got out.
Yeah.
So, you know, that book could have sold hundreds of thousands of copies had it been allowed to go out to publication.
If we had had radio and television
as we do now,
it would have been out there. Yeah,
probably so.
Yeah,
but
and it would
have
been a highlight.
it makes me feel good to know that they're not quashing some of these books now that are controversial just because the president doesn't want that type of information to get out.
Yeah.
That makes me feel good.
Hey, there's been enough squash.
Absolutely.
We don't need any more.
Absolutely.
Right.
So before we move on to talking about the Historical Society and Mohawk and so forth, I did want to mention, when I was on with Charlie, I always like to mention a book that I was currently reading or had read recently that I thought people might be interested in. I'm a great Lincoln fan.
Yeah, me too.
I think a lot of people are. A side note, there is a flag hanging in the State House Rotunda right now that's going to be there for at least until next summer. If you get a chance, go down and see it. It's the same flag that hung in the Rotunda when Lincoln's body was in the Rotunda back in 1865.
Wow.
So if you get an opportunity, stop down and see that. But I just recently finished a book called The Lincoln Conspiracy.
Okay.
Just recently released, I think in March or April of 2020. Now, there's not to be confused with the book that was released about 20 years ago called The Lincoln Conspiracy. But this one was written by a guy by the name of Brad Meltzer.
Boy, is that
timely. That name may sound familiar to you. Okay. He has a couple of TV programs on the History Channel. One's called Brad Meltzer Decoded, where he debunks a lot of historical myths.
Yeah.
And the other one is called Brad Meltzer's Lost History. And they're both on the History Channel. But this book is about the secret plot to kill Lincoln and why it failed before he got to Washington to be sworn in.
Oh.
And a lot of people, I don't think, know that there was a conspiracy to kill him. And it was to take place in Baltimore. They were planning to assassinate him in Baltimore before he ever got to Washington to be sworn in. And he came, of course, by train from Illinois. And the train, the route from the train, it took like 16 to 19 days to do it because it swung all over the place in the Midwest so he can make stops along the way and talk to people. In fact, it stopped in Columbus and in Cleveland both for him to make speeches. But it's a very interesting book. It details how the plot was discovered, and it details the agency that was brought in to basically quell and eliminate this assassination, and that was the Pinkerton the Pinkerton Detective Agency was in it, which was in its infancy in those days. So a very, very interesting book. If you have an opportunity, try to get a copy of it and read it. It's called The Lincoln Conspiracy by Brad Meltzer.
And it's the second
most recent. Like I said, it came out this year. I think it was this year, maybe 2019 sometime. Okay. But
good.
Very interesting book.
And Lincoln right now is being brought into the limelight because of the current president and how, you know, people are likening him,
yeah,
or
not likening him, yeah.
to Lincoln.
Yeah. Well, I have an extensive collection of books on Lincoln. There have been so many written over the years. Carl Sandburg probably got me started with his books
one of the
on
more
Lincoln,
famous ones, yeah.
Yeah, years ago. But there have been a number of people that have written books over the years. Goodwin read. Shoot, I can't think of the title of the book now, but she's a very important author.
There have been a lot of myths about Lincoln.
There have been a lot of things debunked. And as I was telling you guys before we went on air, the only other time I can remember that a president's body was exhumed for any reason was when they thought Lincoln's body, when there was a plot going around to steal his body. And they disinterred the body to make sure that the body was still there. And I just recently read a book about that disinterment as well, which was very interesting, how well the body was preserved, even after, I think it was a number of years after the body was interred.
That's
so
interesting.
But anyway.
Yeah.
That's just something that people might want to take into consideration. And
give the
about.
Name one more time.
The Lincoln Conspiracy
there
by Brad Meltzer, M-E-L-T-Z-E-R. And again, he has a TV show on the History Channel. So.
And I forgot to mention who you are at the beginning of this hour. Fred Malone, he's former president of the Marion Historical Society. I'm Glenn Coble. You're listening to On the Air. We're going to do this on a monthly basis. I've got I got Fred coming back on a monthly basis. I've got James Anderson coming back on a monthly basis. The only guy I haven't gotten in touch with yet is
George.
George. Yeah.
George Kasotis.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we'll get in touch with George too. I like to keep what Charlie did. Charlie's established a pretty good.
And I'll tell you, George Kasotis has a tremendous amount of knowledge on Marion, especially. Over the last 60, 70 years, George has a tremendous amount. The war years, he could probably tell you, if you go up and down the street, no matter what street it is, he could tell you what business was there, who owned the business, what
they did,
how they ran it.
And wants to tell you that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And George has been a lot of places in his lifetime, too.
Yeah.
I know he and Joanne travel quite a bit, even today. But he's a wealth of knowledge as well. And an Ohio State graduate, you know, I'll throw that out there, too. So I don't hold that against anybody.
And he's a fun guy.
He is a fun guy.
And he supported me when I ran for office.
that's great. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Go ahead.
I didn't
mean to interrupt you here.
Well, Marion County, as like everybody today, whether you're in business or whether you're a school or a 501c3 nonprofit, whatever you are experiencing difficulties because of the COVID-19 pandemic that we're going through right now. So, again, the Marion County Historical Society just recently reopened the museum. We are open now. We opened on July the 8th, and we are keeping regular hours. Which are the same hours as we've had before. We're open Wednesday through Sunday from 1 to 4 daily, and you can tour the museum. Now, we are doing the COVID-19 protocol, so we are maintaining social distance. We do ask that you wear a mask when you come to the museum. We are having docents there that can basically give you a guided tour if you so desire. Or when I docent, I like to point things out to people before they start their tour, give them a little history of the building and a little history of the Historical Society, and make sure that I tell them where there are certain things that I don't want them to miss.
Yeah.
But then I like them to search the museum on their own, because there are a lot of things in the museum that require some reading. Some people like to read a lot when they go to a museum. Some people don't care to. So I kind of give them the option. But the museum is now currently open. As I said, we opened on July the 8th. We do not have our gift shop open right now. However, we do have books for sale. And if you're interested, the girls can kind of tell you what those are.
You do have a lot of books there.
We do have a lot of books.
Yeah.
A lot of books on local history written by local authors.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And we had one, a book... signing at the credit union when I was there, and that gentleman's book is at your place, I believe.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess we're about close.
Yeah, we're about ready to take a break, and we'll be back with Fred Malone here on WWGH, and I'm Glenn Coble, and we're learning a lot about Marion. And this is something I took that class that they had that gave us 9 months of history of Marion, and this is just adding to that. So we'll be back in about 5 minutes or 5 seconds, or I'm sorry, 2 minutes.
Have you heard my interviews with Phyllis Diller here on WWGH?
Have I heard it? I could recite it word for word.
Wow, Charlie, you must have a great memory.
Well, not really, but after 6,432 airings, it just becomes a part of your life. The sun comes up, the sun goes down, the moon comes out, and you hear Phyllis Diller's interview and cackle on WWGH.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
3, 2, 1. Oh, no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ad Council, and Make Safe Happen.
All right, we're back with Fred Malone, and I'm Glenn Coble, and you're listening to On the Air. I keep forgetting the name of our show. All right, Fred, continue on.
Okay, so, just like everybody else, you know, we've had to cancel a lot of events this year. Basically, it all started in March with our night at Heritage Hall, which we do every year, and that's where we darken the museum, and we have characters that come alive, and they'll interact with
but
the people.
But you did... not do that.
Weren't able to do that. That's because that was right at the time it was scheduled for, like, the last weekend of March, and that was when this thing all broke open and hit. So everything since then has been canceled. Now, the two events that we have scheduled are two big events that we still have scheduled
are the
Dinner with the Presidents in November, which is probably our biggest event of the year, and also our Lunch with the First Ladies, which is scheduled to take place in August.
Fairly soon,
Currently, we have planned to go ahead with the luncheon. Now, our last decision on that was about 2 weeks ago, and I haven't had an opportunity to talk with our director since these numbers have started to spike to see whether we're still going through with it. But as of 2 weeks ago, we had planned to go through with it. We made arrangements with our caterer. You can't do a buffet, so to speak, anymore.
Right.
But we made arrangements with our caterer where they would plate the lunch for us.
Right.
And we had to cut our numbers down. We normally would take around 125 people for that luncheon, but we've cut our number down to 75. So if we are going to go forward with it, it will be social distancing unless you're in a group that you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you come in, you'll need to be masked. And then, obviously, you can't eat your lunch with a mask on. But after your lunch, we'd appreciate, you know, the fact that you put your mask back on to hear our speakers. And our speakers will be away from the crowd. They'll be, as they've always been, separated in the past. So by cutting our group down from 125 down to 75, with the location that we're in, we usually use the cafeteria at Tri Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
We felt that we could social distance. So right now, we're looking like we're going forward. Check with the Historical Society to make sure. That's 740-387-4255. You can call to make sure we're still selling tickets.
Give that number again.
740-387-4255.
Okay.
Or you can go to MarionHistory.com. Everything's on our website. But right now we're planning to move ahead with the luncheon.
Now, is that now, if I recall correctly, dinner with the presidents, the presidents actually speak to people and stuff.
Yes,
like
yes.
Is this going to be similar to that? Yeah. In that the wives.
Yeah, we give the first ladies a chance to speak, and
fantastic.
But we only have four first ladies at the luncheons. It's a time thing, since it's a luncheon.
We usually
try to finish in an hour and a half. This year I have.
I caught him off guard.
No, you didn't. This year I have Jacqueline Kennedy.
Oh, that would be great.
I have Mrs. Zachary Taylor, Abigail Adams, and Mrs. Franklin Pierce.
Okay.
Will be our speakers this year. And that's, again, if we proceed.
I would hate to be the young lady that you've picked to do Jacqueline.
I have a perfect person for that. Yeah.
She must be beautiful.
She is. She is. And I'm excited. I hope we're able to go ahead with this, even if we have a small group. Because, for one thing, I hate not to do an event like this, because it seems like if you break an event, then you lose momentum.
Yes.
And this is, I think, the fifth or sixth luncheon that we've done with the ladies. Now, with regard to the dinner with the presidents.
You know, that's something I've always, I was an actor in college and for 2 years.
So was
after
I.
That. And I've always thought, boy, I ought to volunteer for that. But I have a terrible memory, so I've never volunteered that.
Well, that's a problem with a lot of people. But if you stick to one particular character and you do your research, you can usually carry on a fairly decent conversation with people at your table. And I don't ask everybody to speak all the time. I always have to limit my speakers to four people because of the time constraints.
Yeah, sure.
But you usually give like a 5 or 6 minute talk, and most people can handle that pretty well. It's more the dinner conversation that kind of scare guys.
That
when
wouldn't scare me at all. It's 6 minutes I'd have to
that
memorize.
You have to stand up there and do something. And I've had guys that don't memorize it. They'll read their speeches, which is okay, as long as you don't stare at the paper all the time.
Yeah.
You know, make eye contact with the public.
Most presidents read their speeches.
That's true.
Anyway.
They did.
Last week, my show, I did Frederick Douglass's speech.
Oh yes.
Of 1856 to the women of some sewing thing, and they were all suffragettes and abolitionists. And I'll tell you what, that was almost a 2-hour speech, and to read that over the air for a guy that doesn't read very well, that was kind of a challenge.
Sure. Well, it is. It really is. Yeah. But this all depends on whether we can work out the logistics with our cater, because we normally cut it off at 300 people, and we usually get 300 people.
Yeah.
We have, the last couple of years, we have used the church across the road from Menards. Day Spring Wesleyan Day Spring. Church,
yeah.
Right. And they have that big facility that they built on a few years ago that works out perfect. But if we social distance, we'd have to cut our crowd down to 150.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple of issues. With 150 people, am I still going to make it worthwhile profit-wise to do?
Either raise the price or
and not being able to send people through a buffet line, is it conceivable for the caterer to be able to plate and serve the dinner? Or can we still walk through a buffet line and then hand you a plate? We have to work out the logistics.
Yeah.
Right now, we're still planning to go ahead with it.
Let's see. I think I've got
it's the first Saturday in November.
November 7th.
Yeah, the first Saturday in November. So that kind of is the issue right now. So we've also talked about if we have to cut the crowd down. Well, we know we'll have to cut the crowd down. There's no question about it. If we have to cut it down to 150 people, do we just do one night, or do we try to do two nights, maybe a week apart, so that we can still accommodate people that couldn't get there the first night, may come the second night, and still maybe get our 300 people. Don't know. Haven't decided yet. We tried doing two nights once out at the Harding High School, and because of the costs involved, it didn't work out for us. We actually lost money out there.
Is there a venue that you could go to that you could, if you social distance, you could get 300 people in?
Not here.
Not in Marion.
Okay. No. Because of the 6 feet apart, you'd have to keep the tables.
Yeah.
You'd have to make sure that you got groups of people at a table that traveled together and kept like family members or something like that. So it's kind of a difficult proposition to come up with. But if we can work out the logistics, we'd like to continue with having it.
Yeah.
So right now we're planning. We're planning on going ahead.
Maybe we could get sponsors.
I have all the presidents set. I'm sorry?
Have you thought about asking sponsors to...
Yes, we do that. In fact, the Marion Community Credit Union has been a great sponsor of ours over the last several years.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, they've actually been a great sponsor of ours. And Modern Woodmen have also been a good sponsor.
They're good sponsors,
to do a matching grant with us. We can't do Modern Woodmen again this year because we did them last year.
And
you can only do it every other year, year, something like that. So, but yeah, the Marion County, the Marion Community Credit Union, which is now called...
Pillar,
has been a big sponsor of ours.
Good.
Over the years. But we do have sponsors. Wyman have also been a big contributor of our last several dinners. So yeah, we've had a lot of community support. But you know, it's nobody gets paid. It's all volunteer. The presidents, the first ladies, and you got to remember, we'll have as many as 18 or 19 presidents represented, even though only four of them speak.
Sure.
We'll get 18 or 19 of them, plus first ladies. And so all their dinners have to be comped by the Historical Society, or we have to get a sponsor for those. And by the time we pay the caterer and pay the rental on the facility, those expenses can add up.
Well, I notice your price is $32 to $38. That's not terribly high.
It isn't. Not for the entertainment and the meal that you get. And again, the meals are all based on those recipes of the people that are speaking that night.
Fantastic.
So if President Lincoln has happened to be talking that night, you're going to get what President Lincoln ate while he was in the White House.
That's cool.
Or John Kennedy or Franklin Pierce or whoever happens to be a speaker this year. So. Yeah. And I can't remember who I've got lined up for the men, and I didn't bring my list with me on that. But whoever's speaking, then you get an opportunity to have what they're eating. And since there's four or five speaking, you get a nice conglomeration of recipes. So you might eat something from the 1820s, and also on that same menu, you might get something from the 1960s. So it's a very interesting mix of food. And the caterer that we use, we've been using for the last 15 years, and she does an excellent job in matching those recipes that are taken directly from the White House recipes.
That's cool.
And as you can imagine, some of the stuff they ate in the 1820s and 1830s, far cry from what we eat today.
I was going to say, do you hand out Pepto-Bismol?
No, we don't, and we've never had anybody get sick.
Well, good.
And again, we have enough selection on the buffet. Like, we'll have a couple of different types of meat. We'll have a couple of different vegetables, potatoes, salads, desserts. So you have an opportunity to sample all of it or some of it or whatever you choose to take. So, and the same way with drinks. You know, you may have some kind of a mint julep or some kind of a spiced tea or, you know, whatever the bill of fare was for whoever speaking that night. So, that's what really adds a flair to it.
If it was Ulysses S. Grant, it would be beer, right?
Well...
I'll be there.
He was a great fan of brownies.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he loved brownies. But you usually have brownies on dessert for Harry Truman because Harry had brownies all the time in the White House. Grant didn't. One of Grant's favorite things was a cucumber salad.
Oh, that does sound good.
He liked a cucumber salad. I'm not partial to it, but Grant liked it. And I don't think Grant isn't one of our attending presidents this year.
Okay.
But we've had Grant quite a bit. But I do remember one of the dishes that we had. Oh, and I can't even think of the name of it. But it was a very odd dish. It was from a very early president. And the caterer had quite a time in trying to match that because one of the principal things that was involved in the dish wasn't even around anymore. So she had to come up with something that was similar to it in order to complete the dish.
Fantastic.
But
Who is the caterer? Let's give her
we use Special Occasions and Upper Sundusky.
I've used them several times, yes.
She just does a wonderful job. They always present well. They set the tables well. But right now, we're planning to go ahead. Hopefully, everything is on track. But with regard to anything else happening in the museum, Everything else has been canceled basically for the year. Yeah. I do want to talk about Lynn School when we come back. I guess we're getting pretty close.
Yeah,
to
we're getting close.
Close to the break. So
the date of that one is November 7th.
Yeah.
And you're still planning
to go ahead. Yeah. And I am having John Kennedy speak. That was kind of one of the reasons why I went with the Jacqueline Kennedy at the ladies' luncheon.
Gotcha.
Was to give her an opportunity to be in front of a crowd, a smaller crowd. And the gentleman that I have doing John Kennedy.
Is she going to
accompany him? At the dinner, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
And the gentleman that I have doing John Kennedy has been our Franklin Roosevelt before, and he does a excellent Franklin Roosevelt, and I have no doubt that he'll be spot on with John Kennedy as
well. Do they try to sound like the president?
Well, yes.
As close as they can.
If we know what their voices are,
yeah.
And in modern presidents, we do know what their voices are.
Yeah, sure you do.
So they will do their best, and I have done Richard Nixon before.
Oh, fantastic. We'll have to have you do that.
I have a lot of fun with him.
Scott, do you remember when Hillary Clinton came to Marion in 2016?
Yes, I do. I stood outside of the Harding Hotel in the rain waiting to get an interview that didn't happen.
You know why she chose the Harding Hotel to meet?
No, I don't.
Well, they used to have a hair salon in the lobby, and she could sure use it.
Here we go again. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
All right. Well, we're here with Fred Malone, and we're talking about dinner with the presidents, and we're also talking about the dinner with the wives.
We don't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. And I am not a crook, just for the record. I am not a crook.
That's Fred, not Glenn, doing his impression of Mr. Nixon.
My mother was a saint. There was no other one like her. She was a Quaker, you know.
Yes, I knew that. That's why how I was related to him, by the way. And I played in his inaugural parade.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did, with the Army Field Band.
Well, speaking of Quakers, my family, going back on the Malone side, were involved in the formation of Malone College, which was a Quaker school.
Yes, it was. Yeah,
over in Canton.
Well, you've only got 14 minutes.
Okay,
to go, so you better get it going.
update on Lynn School.
Yeah.
Lynn School is coming along very well. Really, about the only thing that we're still trying to put together are desks, student desks. There were a number of the student desks that were destroyed during the truck went through the side of the building.
Yeah.
So I'll put the call out. If anybody is interested in helping reconstruct the desks that we have, some of them can be saved. But they need somebody that is really good at carpentry work and can put some of them back together. They can call the museum again at 740-387-4255. We are in the phone book, if you still have a phone book.
Yeah.
Or you can find us online at marionhistory.com. But if you're interested in maybe helping try to restore those desks, give Brandy a call or Bobby at the museum and let them know.
What do the
The old-fashioned kind of school desk that had the
thing
the
comes
top
around.
That raised up,
oh,
had an inkwell in it, and they were attached to a row.
Okay,
most of them were a row.
That would be a little bit more you'd have to have some good construction
You'd have to
skills.
Have some knowledge about how to go back together. They weren't all destroyed, but a number of them were.
Wow.
We're still looking at doing some painting in some areas of the building, but I don't think we're going to open at all this year. Our original thought was to open. We were going to hope to be open by the end of the school year, because we always do school tours with the 4th and 5th school children in the county and the surrounding counties. But obviously, with the COVID going on and the fact that the building had been destroyed, we couldn't do that. But now,
is that out on Route 4?
Yes, Route 4 North. What we were planning at this point in time is holding off because we want to have it when we reopen. We want to have a big celebration.
That'd be fun.
To re-celebrate the school. We did have a celebration a few years ago to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the reconstruction of the school, but now we want to have a celebration for the rebuilding of the destruction of the school.
Jeez.
And have it open again. So we're thinking about just holding off to 2021.
Okay.
And not reopening until next spring.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that probably should do that just because of all the problems that we're having right now.
And again, it's really hard to social distance in a one-room schoolhouse. Because of the constraints of the building and that type of thing. And we are looking into, and I'll throw this out there because we could use some financial assistance along these lines, we are looking into relocating the log house that's at the county fairgrounds.
So you'd have to move it.
Out to where Lynn School is.
Oh, that'd be a good idea.
We do own an acre of ground out there. We're only using about half of that right now. But we, right behind the school, we own another half an acre of ground. So we're thinking about maybe trying to turn that into a green, so to speak, a historic green.
Yeah.
And by moving the log house out there and the smokehouse that's also out there at the fairgrounds, that we can create a green and have some programs out
that
there.
That log house, is that the one that's right by the road there?
Yes,
right,
you can see it right from the street, and it's right there by the one entrance that well, let's see, would that be the west entrance of the fairgrounds?
Would they have to take it apart?
Yes,
it had,
same as when it was put there. It was brought from another place in the county earlier, a number of years ago. Carol Neidhart was very important in that, getting that reconstructed. So that would have to be taken down and rebuilt out there. But the problem is, with the being of the fairgrounds right now, we really don't get much use out of it. The only time people even notice it's there is during the fair. And unfortunately now, with the way they park the trucks for the rides and all that, and where we're located, is people
can't
still
see
don't
it.
Get you
yeah.
can't see it, and people don't come down there.
The only time I've been in it was at the fair.
So we thought if we could move it out there, utilize that kind of like a historic green, we could have more events out there. And publicize not only the log house but the Lynn School as well, and just kind of make that a nice little area. So we're looking for donors. We're looking for interest in that kind of a project. So if you're interested in that, also give the museum a call and let the girls know that you have some interest along those lines. So we have a lot of things that we'd like to do. We'd like to plan. We are celebrating our 50th anniversary this past year. That's still an ongoing thing. Since the museum was not able to be open for the grand celebration of the bicentennial also this year, we have a lot of exhibits that are talking about 1920 and Harding's election to the presidency and what was going on in Marion during 1920. So if you get an opportunity, please stop over to see the museum. Again, social distancing is in place. The museum has had a huge deep cleaning. While we were closed, we got a grant from the Ohio Arts Council to do a deep cleaning for reopening. So we had a company come in and clean from top to bottom, like has never been cleaned before. So everything is sterilized and sanitized.
You didn't run across a dog's collar, did you?
No dog's collar, unfortunately. I kind of think that was melted down a long time ago and sold for the gold content. Stop over and see the museum. Open Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4 every day in the afternoon for a minimal fee. And I don't remember what the fee is, but it's minimal. And again, you get the popcorn, wind-up popcorn museum at the same time.
Yes, I was going to ask you
about
that.
You get two museums in one when you come there.
Tell me about, I've never been in the popcorn museum.
Oh, my word.
What's in it?
Well, it's the largest popcorn-related museum in the world. People come from all over the world to see it. We've had people as far away as Japan. We had a lot of European people come to see the Popcorn Museum, and then when they get there, they don't realize there's another museum there as well. But
is that right?
Yeah.
No, I knew it the other way around.
It's the home of the Marion County Historical Society, Heritage Hall, but the Why Not Popcorn Museum rents space from us, and that was, of course, George Brown's baby. He's the one that got that all started, and he's the one that amassed the collection of popcorn-related memorabilia that's in there. There are three circus wagons in there.
Wow.
There's a Model T that was built specifically by the Ford Company.
Oh, I've got to get into
it. For the sale of popcorn and Peanuts, and Mobile. In fact, it used to be driven every year in the popcorn parade during the popcorn festival until a few years ago. Still drivable, but it takes 2 days to get it out and another 2 days to get it back in. And so it's just not worth the effort.
I don't know if you knew it, but Orville Redenbacher was one of my father's parishioners.
Was he really?
In Valparaiso, Indiana.
Well, he was also a grand marshal in one of the popcorn parades years ago.
And I got his daughter to be the grand marshal in the popcorn parade about 5 years ago.
Oh,
six
did you?
Years ago. Yeah.
Well, we also have when Paul Newman decided to make popcorn, Newman's Own Popcorn. It was made at the Wyandotte Popcorn Factory here in Marion. And he and his wife got to be, Joanne Woodward, got to be friends with George Millie Brown. And so Paul had bought a popcorn wagon and had it completely restored that he used in advertising Popcorn's Own. Had it up in Central Park in New York and all over the country when he was advertising popcorn. And when he was done using it, he donated it to George and Billy. So it's in the museum as well.
Fantastic.
And we have a poster signed by Paul Newman. Where Paul Newman did not sign his name very often. He did not. And it wasn't because he was snobby. He just thought, hey, I'm just an ordinary kid from Ohio. Nobody wants my signature. So he wouldn't sign anything. So we have a popcorn poster advertising Newman's Own popcorn with his signature on it and a picture of Millie and George or George's wife, somebody, I can't remember now. But, it's a fantastic collection.
Now, if people want to come to either or, what is the admission price?
Well, I can't remember. I think it's $4 or $5.
Okay.
It's very cheap. And you get a senior discount. Kids under a certain age are in free.
Okay.
It's very reasonable.
So is one price pay for both?
Yep. You get two museums for the price of one.
There you go. That's
a tremendous amount of history. We have a room downstairs, two rooms downstairs devoted entirely to Warren Harding. One of these days in the near future, we will have a room devoted to Mary Ellen Withrow.
Oh, good.
The collection that she currently has out at Primrose will eventually be moved to the Marion County Historical Society and will be a very prominent part of the museum. That's in tune with Mary Ellen's wishes. This is in the planning stages, and I it's entirely up to Mary Ellen when she decides to do that, but the arrangements have been made.
I wonder if any of the bills that her signature is on are still floating around anywhere.
I have a $100 bill that I just recently had her sign for me.
I was going to ask her to sign one if I could.
That actually turned up in change.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are some bills that are still
floating
around.
A rich person with a $100 bill.
It'll never be spent.
Yeah.
It's in a nice money holder in a prominent place in my home.
There you go.
Yeah. She's such a sweet lady.
She is a sweet lady.
And Mary Ellen always attends the presidential dinner that the Historical Society has every year and gives a little speech.
She's so active.
Yeah.
I just love that she's that active.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And,
amazing woman.
She's not a young girl. She's not
young
an old
at heart.
Girl either.
She's young at heart. She's young at heart.
Yeah.
She's young at heart. But you just can't beat the collections that we have at the Marion County Historical
Society.
I'm going
to have to get
over
there.
Close to 40,000 items in the collection, Glenn.
Oh, wow.
Close to 40,000 items.
Now, are we going to have to do if I want to go see it, should I call ahead because of the COVID thing?
Not now.
Just
show up with your mask.
Okay.
Yeah, show up with your mask.
Cool.
As I said, Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4.
Cool.
And, pay your admission price, and you get a senior discount.
I like senior discounts.
And when you leave, at least we were done. I'm not sure they're doing it now because of the COVID, but when you used to, when you left, you got a box of popcorn to take with you, too.
My.
But I'm sure they've curtailed
that
now because of COVID, right?
Out,
but, but that was also a little perk, too. But
Well, let me give you a warning. We've got about 2 minutes to go.
Well, we don't have time to talk about anything else
up?
In particular. I will say that the Mohawk Historical Society, the museum in Sycamore, is also currently closed because of COVID. We just recently completed the addition of our new building, so now we have three buildings that are interconnected. A year ago, we bought the building that was adjacent to our two buildings to the north and tore that building down and rebuilt a new building, that looks like an old stable from the front.
Okay.
You will not enter that building through that stable entrance. You'll go through the regular entrance, but it is all interconnected.
Now, the regular entrance is right there on Church Street?
Right on the main street of town, which is called, it's not Main Street, it's called Sandusky Street, I think it is.
Okay.
Because Sandusky or Staffel, it's been so long since I've lived up there, now I've forgotten the name of the street. But if you come in on State Route 231, you come to the main intersection of town, and it's right there to the north. If you come in on State Route 67, you would turn to the right, come uptown, and it's you'll see it when you come up to the main intersection. We don't have a stoplight in Sycamore. We have a blinking light.
Okay.
So it's at the blinking light, and we have three buildings now. So.
All right. Well, we've got
we'll about, talk about that next time.
Yes, we'll have to, and we're going to have Fred on once a month. On a Wednesday, right? Is this Thursday? I'm sorry.
On the third Thursday.
So make sure you tune in 1 month from today, and he'll give us a lot more stuff. Fred doesn't sound like he's the type of guy that's going to run short of words.
Well, next time, I think next time, one of the things I want to talk about is pioneer diseases.
Oh. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Well, you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble and today Fred Malone. We're glad that you listened, and we hope that you'll tune in for a Swap Shop coming
you're
up.
You're listening
at 12.
To WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio.